Sci-Fi Party Line. Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today I have with me Nene.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. And welcome back, Daryl.
Hello.
Hello.
What's up, Daryl?
What up?
On the show together before? Has it been a while?
We haven't.
Really?
What?
It's so weird.
Are you sure about that?
I don't know.
I'm positive. I don't think we have.
Done so. What? No. I think we talked about, like, Fringe once with a whole bunch of people.
I don't think I was on that one.
Oh. Well, it's time because we all talk pretty much every day on Twitter.
I know. I think that's why I thought. Blurring.
Well, today, guys, we're going to talk about Grimm and Stephanie's Choice, The Booth at
All right, Masterpiece Theater up in here now.
Right? So first we begin with the second season of Grimm. We are two episodes in, and we already have a questionable, weird new intro to the show.
Oh, Grimm. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm not feeling it. It makes it feel like a cheesy show now. Or do y'all care, or how you feel?
I mean, listen, I watched Xena and Hercules for like 500 seasons. This is nothing compared to that.
It has a narrator, and it's like a man.
Yeah. It's like
trapped in a world.
Cheesy. Yeah. It's cheesy as his hair.
And his mom is scary.
It feels like it should be on UPN circa 2002 or something.
If that, I don't even think it needs to be in the 2000s. It's like
Cleopatra 2020.
That's old. No, that's old school. That's like 80s.
Yes. But anyway, aside from the opening credits, I have to say the first two episodes were really kind of compelling. Become my favorite, one of my favorite shows, even though I was lukewarm to it at first. Y'all remember that?
Oh yes, very clearly.
Daryl, what are you liking about the two new episodes of the new season? What are you thinking about it?
He feels less clueless than he has the entire the character Nick. He just feels. Instead of sitting there looking he does sit there looking confused still, but he just feels like he has a little bit more of a handle on what's going on.
Yeah.
More than before, because it seemed like everybody knew everything but him, and he would just be standing there trying to figure everything out, and it's like, you know, stuff is happening, you don't have time. Like, people's faces turn to rats and crazy stuff, and you sitting there looking confused.
I know, though, but if like that started happening to you like last year, and you'd never seen that before, you'd kind of be freaked out a little.
I know, but episode 10, it's time to stop.
Skarsgård, and it has teeth with wings. You know, everything is always new and more bizarre.
But the fifth time I see somebody's head change into a tiger or something, that pretty much, I'm not going to ask stupid questions when I see a dragon. Like, it's like if you're already in a world, you already see that this stuff is going on. It's kind of like when other stuff happens, I'm not going to be that and you know, that crazy about it.
Classic New Yorker.
We ain't got time to be whining about what's going on.
What do you think about moms?
She scares me.
Seriously?
Yeah, in a good way, though.
Okay.
She's mom. She has that scary look. Like she's like the aunt. In the first episode, how she looks like she wouldn't be able to kill a room full of people.
Yeah.
And then she does something really crazy.
Yeah.
With skills and starts kicking and backflips and all that kind of stuff. That kind of... I kind of like that. That's like the Buffy.
Yeah, show. It is.
Kind of like that to me. So I kind of like when she, you know, when she does all those little crazy stuff, and he's just standing there going, "That's my mommy." Like,
so Stephanie, you've been a little quiet. What are you thinking about second season of Grimm?
He has his hair.
Well, his hair's getting better. That's going to gradually get better. I think that's going to gradually get better as the show gets better. But beyond the hair, really and truly, I love that they're going darker with the show. And I love that the origin story or whatever this is getting more interesting by the minute. I'm glad. It's interesting to finally learn what the police captain is. I mean, we don't know for sure. He's royalty. We don't know for sure what that means, but barely prince. Human. So
he's prince. Right. He's a prince. We know that.
Bastard prince.
A half prince, half human, half something.
It makes more sense now that he would have sort of his own realm. I mean, he was so territorial and like, I've got it covered. And and it makes more sense that he would not have the motivation of a Reaper. So I couldn't understand, you know, in the first season, like, I couldn't understand his motivations. You know, if he's not a Reaper, maybe he's like the head Reaper, but he's not the head Reaper, so... maybe, I don't know, he's some other, what are they called? I can't remember what the people are called. The fairy tale people.
Trolls.
Vessin.
Oh.
He's not another Vessin. And so I'm like, where does he fall in exactly? Because he's been playing everything very close to the chest. Mm-hmm. And,
speaking of chest.
Oh, right. What a great segue. Oh,
get it out. Wow,
I have to. I'm so sorry. I am just like, that second episode, he took his shirt. Shush up. He took his shirt off, and I was having a really bad day, and Sasha Ruiz takes his shirt off on the show, and I'm a happy person. Like, it made me smile.
He put some grease on, and he did that little thing where he's like, I'm in pain.
I know, and it was just like, really, it didn't look like he was in pain. It was kind of like he was on a stripper pole or something. So yeah, it was
Chippendale music.
It was like agony ballet. It was really funny.
Yeah.
It's that they wrote that in, like, as a showcase for his pecs. Like, he did not have to take his shirt off and like
rip open my shirt,
flash dance it,
going.
Agony ballet, oh my god.
It's true, though.
An
interpretive dance. It was awesome. I'm not going to, I mean, don't get me wrong, I loved it, but you know they wrote that in just so he could take his shirt off and roll around.
And it's like, they probably didn't even have to twist his arm. He's like, take your shirt off and do this, and you know, and he's like, okay.
He suggested it, probably. He's like, you know, I've got a rockin' bod, so I need to be shirtless in this episode or something.
I've been working out.
Oh, gosh. So, thank you, Grimm, writers and directors. You are winners to me.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job.
Well, the story's getting better, too. I mean, I just really like where it's going. I'm glad that Juliet wasn't in a coma for like 5 more episodes. You know, that was just the right length of Juliet in the coma, I think.
Yeah. But then now we have to hear her speak and not remember her, and she has amnesia.
But did you see that coming? Like, I knew as soon as they said memory loss.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the, ooh, I love you, Juliet, and who are you? And then cutting scene and the whole thing. So, yeah.
That actually has me a little bit worried, because at the end of season one, it seemed like Nick was getting ready to tell Hank and Juliet the truth. And when he finally told Juliet, I'm like, all right, Hank's next. And then now that she's lost her memory, are they going to go in that direction? Especially since Hank seems to be pretty tortured. Like, I feel really bad for him.
Yeah.
sitting in the middle of his living room with a shotgun, not sleeping.
Yeah,
like,
with no doze and whatnot.
If I had a nickel for every time I had done that.
Daryl, you're funny. You got a shotgun. I was just like, we need more with his characters. I just feel like he can get killed at any time and nobody would miss him.
It's time to tell him. And I think they're going to tell him next episode.
But then, like, he's moping around. He's hugging his gun and all this. I don't think he's going to handle it well. And I think he's going to leave.
I don't know. I think he might be relieved. I think he might be relieved if Nick tells him that he's not crazy.
Because when he told Nick, hey, he's like, you know, I know you and I'm not stupid. You know, this whole season, I know you've been lying to me about stuff, but.
No, he said he trusts him and not to let him hang out to dry.
Yeah, but he said, I know there are things you keep from me. He basically told him, look, bud, I know there are things that you keep from me, but I'm kind of trusting that, you know, it's not something that's going to bite me in the ass later on. So,
it already has, actually.
He did save his life. I mean, one of them things is when he saved his life. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
So I think that this is going to bond them a little bit more, and he'll understand what the hell he's been seeing.
And he won't. I hope so. I like the cast. That's something that I didn't expect. I didn't expect to actually bond with the characters as much as I have. Like, especially, what's her name? Who's Monroe's girlfriend?
Oh, yeah, her.
I can't think of her name.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
But she's going to be a regular now.
Oh, Rosalie.
Rosalie, yes, Rosalie.
Very good. Yeah, she'll die at the end of the last.
No, she won't. No, she's a regular cast member now.
Until the last episode of the season.
Don't be negative.
I just know
the tropes, man. I just know the tropes. Yeah. It's either Juliet dies
or Hank. Because he's black.
Well, they spank Hank. That.
No way. I don't think that's going to happen.
No, well, what's going to happen with Sergeant Wu? Because I don't want him to die either. I love that guy.
Yeah, they've got such a long way to go with the characters. I'm really excited to see where they go. And so that's why I don't think that they would kill anybody off.
Well, they killed off what's-her-name's mom.
I was surprised by that.
Yeah, because I like that lady, and she got killed off of True Blood, mm-hmm. Now she got killed off of this show, and I'm just like, I like this lady, I wish they quit killing her.
You know why they killed her mom, right?
Why?
So that Adeline will come back and be, like, a bad person for the rest of the show.
Whatever.
Well, I mean, she's got a reason, right?
Well, she had a reason before she got her powers taken away.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, but now she really has a reason. I mean, I think there probably is going to be like this kind of civil war story arc. Where
it's her fault. I mean, she caused her mother to get killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did.
By doing that thing to Juliet, you know, you weren't supposed to do that. You did it, and that caused this whole thing. So I don't know.
We'll see. Yeah.
Maybe she'll hook up with Hank.
Again?
Well, I mean for real this time.
Yeah, I don't want that for Hank anymore.
No, I don't want that either. I was sad to see her mom go. I'm also really glad that Nick's mom's leaving because she looks like she's like in full vest and gear without even having the special effects. Like, she's really scary looking to me.
Aged. I mean, I remember her from so many movies.
I know, I remember her too, and she's a beautiful woman. She just makes all these weird scowls in Grimm that make her literally look like one of the zombies from The Legend of Zelda. It's just,
no. That's
she's
what
got
I was trying
these
to think
sunken
of
eyes.
The Legend of Zelda, I swear, that's what I kept thinking of, her hair and the face and the...
Oh, y'all are so freaking mean. I hope she never listens to this.
It's true, though.
No, she's a really pretty lady. It's just that she's not doing her any favors to make those serious constipation faces because it looks really bad.
She smiled once. That one time when she was talking to...
Rosalie?
No, to...
Nick.
Rosalie.
Monroe.
Monroe and his girlfriend. Remember that time when they were talking, when they dropped her off?
When they hugged?
Yeah. She gave that one little smile just that one time. That was it.
No, she smiled when she was burning Nick's pancakes and toast.
I think part of it might be her makeup too, because she has all these scars on her face.
Oh yeah.
So it might be that might be part of it, but well, yeah, she looked really scary in the show.
You know what? You're right. Maybe they wanted to make sure that his mother looked battle scarred. So we get that impression that she's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. I like that. But I also like, towards the end of the latest episode, Nick drops her off at the bus station, thinking she's leaving town and go deal with the coins. And she's not. She's still in town. So I think that she's up to no good. And what if Nick has to kill his mom?
Can I tell you something funny about that?
Okay.
So as a local, where the trailer is and where the train station is, it's like maybe a 5-minute walk. She's like, I need a ride to this train station. Oh my God, you have two legs. Go walk 5 minutes.
No. It looked pretty far away to me. So,
well, you know,
the untrained eye.
That's funny.
I'd still want to ride.
Like, you're a New Yorker. Y'all walk everywhere, don't you?
Yeah, but when you got the car, you know.
Yeah.
Lazy. No, you have to save your parking spot. You never leave the parking spot.
Oh, you're right. We don't leave until we know there's a parking wherever we're going. That's the first question. Is there parking? Other than that, we ain't leaving. I ain't getting in the car to go unless you tell me to bargain. We don't do that. We just don't.
That's funny. Because you're not going to have anywhere to park.
It's heck yeah. I'm going to be mad driving around in a circle. We don't be doing that.
Yeah, that's not cool.
I'm just the cat in knowing what she's doing, because she obviously is sticking around, but I don't know.
I don't think she's bad, though. I think she's doing something that probably will get herself killed. Like, it's something dangerous that might get herself killed, but I think she's trying to...
She's going to disappoint Nick, because she basically lied to him by saying she wanted a way out of town. She's staying. Not only that, she has those 3 coins, so are they tempting her or something like that? Mm-hmm. And what's going on with that? Is she really going to destroy him? I don't think so. I didn't hear it in her voice that she wanted to destroy him, and I don't know why Nick trusted her with
him. I don't think she does have... I don't remember that part. Did she... I know that he was handing them to her, and then I thought they were interrupted by the FBI agent thing, and then they put it back and
they
went.
Put it back, and then they came back, and he gave them to her again towards the end, and she's like, let's go. And then that's when they went to the bus station and stuff like that. So,
but he's a cop, and I think that she can't tell him certain things because...
Yeah, but, I mean, she already, like... was abandoned him basically. She can kind of not be an asshole and not hurt him more.
Well, she did, but that's kind of hard though, because if you're Grimm and you know that they can sense you, and it's not a sure thing that her son would be a Grimm, if you had to make that choice, I mean, would you stay and constantly be worried that your son, you know, if they find out about you and you're, you know, they're going to try to kill your son to get to you. So are you going to stay or take the chance?
I don't know, because it's like, I'm not going to use that analogy because that's pretty gross. But it's like something happening to you and your parents not warning you about it. And you probably should have had that information. And it would be better to be educated than to run around and have this horrible thing to happen to you, and to be accustomed to it and used to it and know what to expect than to have the unexpected happen to you and not know how to handle it. Because I think maybe the aunt might have still been lived if Nick would have had more information, more tools.
Well, if we're to believe her character, she herself said she regretted leaving him.
Yeah.
True.
And she gave pretty much the exact opposite advice that his aunt gave her, or him rather. You know, his aunt said, don't get too close to anyone. And she's saying, no, get close to people and stay with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I think her intentions are pure and earnest or whatever, but she's been a vigilante for a long time, and she's got her own agenda. Like, she's not a Grimm in the traditional sense. She's got a very real goal, and that's to kill the people who killed her her husband.
Yeah.
So I think she probably learned some information in the last episode that caused her to stay. And that's probably, I mean, we don't know why she came there in the first place. So she may have already found out that information when she at the point when she showed up, or she either found out about the prince and then decided to stick around and investigate that.
And are you going to kill, you can't just walk up to Nick and say, I'm going to kill your captain.
Yeah, I don't want him to die.
She doesn't know who he is.
Well, I mean, if she got information, well, we don't know exactly what she knows, but if she got information that he's somebody in the, maybe in law enforcement or something, somebody higher up, and I might have to kill them, like Nick, she doesn't want Nick to do it. She'd do it.
I think that I know her name now, Adeline's mom, Catherine, if Catherine had told her exactly who the prince was and where he was, she wouldn't have hesitated. She would have left and taken care of it. So she probably doesn't know. I mean, it's probably true that she doesn't know who he is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I, for one, will stop watching the show if they kill off Sasha Royce, because he's...
They won't kill him off. He's the biggest name on the show. Aside from Grim Lady.
Yeah. I don't even think he's completely bad. We don't know.
Yeah, with a chest like that, I don't care.
He is a human. I mean, he's half human, so we don't know. I mean, he might have had to play the...
Well, maybe the good side of him don't have all the human weaknesses. Yeah.
It's interesting though, because he's taken this like buttermilk concoction or whatever that made him pure of heart. I wonder how that, if at all, that will affect his character.
And also, why hasn't Nick, what is he doing, or what type of power does he have that Nick can't detect it?
Well, it looked like he can, like when he went through the little mirror session with the when he did a little thing with the I think that part of his abilities being half human and half what Grim or whatever it is. I mean, not Grim, but half whatever.
Bastard Prince.
Yeah, Bastard Prince.
From him.
That he can kind of hold that part in that Nick can't see it.
So he's tucking.
Yeah, he's tucking.
Oh, my God.
And to tuck for so long, to tuck for so long, it looks like it
sometimes he can see him. My mind went to Silence of the Lambs. We have to get
out of here. I know.
Out of here. Retreat.
But you know what? I think Steph is right with the pure of heart thing. That might have a lasting effect. Like when he's supposed to really take Nick, finally when he's supposed to take Nick out, like kill him, that might affect him and he can't do it.
Yeah.
And of course there's the other possibility that the reason why he hasn't killed Nick is that he's trying to sort of make some legitimacy or add some legitimacy to his name since he's the Bastard Prince.
Mm-hmm.
So he that would be a pretty decent head on a platter. And he might feel that would
restore his name
in the royals or whatever. Well, I don't know.
Exactly,
the royalty seems to be like a mafia now.
Yeah,
but Nick is not exactly the smartest guy in the room. Like he could have set him up and killed him a long time ago if he really, really wanted to.
Right, he could have. So I don't know. Honestly,
it looks like
close to his chest.
He might be aiming Nick in certain spots to take out people he might want to take out.
That's true.
That could be something he's doing too. So. I don't think they're very close. They're whatever family he's a part of, I don't think they're very close with each other. They just assume kill each other than anything else to get control.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, he might actually be trying to distance himself from this family, which it's a family of monsters so mm-hmm. far. So why wouldn't you want to distance yourself if you're a good person? We don't know if he's good or bad, though.
Yeah, and we don't know the human side. Like, who is his family, his human family?
Well, it might be like... it might be that the family started off as human, but they became more and more evil and that turned him into a monster, like a golem or something.
Oh, God.
What if he is human side?
They got the precious. Somebody had control of the coins and turned into a golem. And
I didn't think that he was half human, half monster. I thought that maybe he was
human sometime in the past.
No, not even that. I think that he kind of like a shapeshifter.
But she said human. She said
you're barely human.
Yeah. Well, she said you're barely human, which I thought she was just insulting him.
Well, she
I didn't think she was being technical.
I took it as he was part, like, to do this spell, you have to be human. You know, you have to have a human.
Oh, okay. You're right.
Great.
Not sure about the mythology there, but they've got a lot of ground to cover, and it's going to be really cool, I think.
So what type of being, because we know we have, like, the bears and all the, you know, fairy tale creatures. I wonder what creature he is, because I can't figure it out just yet. And then we'd be able to more figure it out, because to me he kind of looks zombie-ish.
He sure
did. Interesting, because when Nick's mom identified the prince, or talked about the prince to Nick, she didn't name the beast, like where she had named the beast the other time, the tiger dude. I don't remember how to say that name. Mm-hmm. It was French. Right. Anyway, she named him, and in previous episodes, they've always named the beast or the person. Right. And this time she said, oh, there's a prince, and left it at that. So it is interesting. I don't know what that means.
Maybe they're still hashing it out and writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they probably have that figured out, but it would be an interesting way to go if Nick and Sasha Ruiz's character, like, band together.
I think that's going to happen. I think so, too. Yeah, I think
they're going to have to.
Yeah. I think it's going to be, like, an epic supernatural story arc where there's just this huge battle, and there's sides, and whose side are you on, and because of, you know, the war is coming, and...
And why is he so protective of Juliet?
Who?
The captain.
Because if Nick goes rogue, then, mm-hmm. you know, you got a Grimm that you can't really get control
yeah,
of.
Yeah, but it seemed more than that when he looked at her. Like, he seemed concerned. Like...
Because he knows that if Nick goes off the rails, then that's it. He's a unattached, unhinged Grimm, and then that could be bad for business, like, literally.
Yeah, but what if he's kind of related to Juliet? His human side.
And
he looked at her more than just...
I don't know, dude. He was high off of, like, being curd, and I don't know.
No, well, I think it was a purely strategic move, because, you know, he's thinking several steps ahead at all times. Mm. And I think part of it was that something happened that was beyond his control. Adeline did that, you know, and he didn't know about it. And but also, he could think several steps ahead and what would happen if Juliet died. And I think Kat's right in that he wouldn't have as much control over Nick, but also that, yeah, Nick seems confused, but he's coming out of that because he's starting to come into his own, and mm-hmm. he does have hunches, and he probably would get to the bottom of it, and that would get dangerously close to Sasha Ruiz's character. I mean, he would probably find out way too much information.
I got a question, though. Do they have, besides being able to see them, does he have, the Grimms have other abilities, like super abilities to learn how to fight better? When they get mad?
I don't know.
Because at first, when the guy was in the beginning of the first of the season opening, that guy was kicking his ass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Doing all his kung fu, and then all of a sudden, Nick just started, a switch went off, and Nick just started doing moves that I've never seen Nick do before.
I don't know.
Did you see that?
I know what you mean. I don't know what to think about it, honestly.
I thought I missed something, or like his reflexes seem better.
Maybe they got better stunt casting or something.
Honestly, it's like Total Recall.
Oh, here
when
we go.
It's like the Bourne Identity when suddenly remembering all this stuff, or I don't know, it could be a little bit of both. Okay. I don't think the rules are set yet.
I'm one of those nerds that I want to know, like you, tell me what the abilities are of everybody. So when you do something crazy, I'm like, all right, you can do that. Like, because you couldn't fight that good like 5 minutes ago. You couldn't beat, you know, Jet Li, and then all of a sudden I want answers, and then he started doing some Bruce Lee moves, and I'm like, hold up.
Yeah. I don't know. It looked like something kicked in. It was some survival technique, you know?
Right. Like, he can go into something, because his mother, you know, like, she had those moves down, and the aunt, even at her age, had those moves down. So I'm like, is that something they train, you know, like, not just training? Is that a part of them to be able to...
I think to be a Grimm, you have to have a badassery gene.
Which I'll go with.
I can believe that, because Monroe can smell, you know, and the other lady can mix potions, and everybody has their gifts, so why not?
Because if you're not going to get super strength, then they got to have something extra than just being able to see them. Like, to be that dangerous. Like, when you mention a Grimm, like, these guys can rip open a human being apart and kill them. And then you mention a Grimm and they're just scared out of their mind. So, like,
it has that's interesting to me. That doesn't really sit very well with me.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the Grimms went after the Vessen in the first place. Yes, there were the bad people or whatever. So they're like Vessen police. But then, what is a little mouse person gonna do to a Grimm? And what is a beaver person gonna do to a Grimm? To me, that seems like, and they're all like super afraid. Like,
I think the Grimms were like heavy-handed with their rule at one point, and it got out of control. And then I don't know, maybe they lost favor and their numbers dwindled, and then that's why they're not as badass anymore. Because, you know, you have Nick; he's the Grimm with the heart of gold. So, and his mom is kind of scary though. So if you have a whole legion of Grimms like his mom, then yeah, I can see why they'd be scared.
Is his mom that way? Why is she so hardened against all these?
Because they have the badassery gene.
But even the aunt, like, it's like a big deal that you do not mix with Grimms. Like, you do not interact with them at all. At any point, you do not.
That was the old way of doing it, and Nick's the new school, so maybe they just had it like that. I don't know. That's just like...
You know what's interesting?
I don't know. What?
On IMDb, because I have such a terrible memory, I had to look at the casts, and Nick's mom is just listed as Woman in Black, and we know her name from previous episodes, so why is she Woman in Black?
Sometimes they forget. Interns enter that information in. It's true. I mean, interns actually enter that information, and sometimes they forget. They don't really keep up to date.
Oh, so you gotta send them an email.
No, I think, I don't know. Maybe it isn't up to date, but maybe there's something to that.
Oh, here we go. Because it's fairy time.
What just happened?
You just entered a new segment.
Oh, okay, guys. That's enough about Grimm. Unless you guys even have any last thoughts.
No, you shut me down. You shut me down with a theory song.
Jingle.
You just did that. I just was adding to it.
You just like put the hook around my neck and you're like,
the Apollo. Sorry, you know, tap dance her off.
You get three wacky people together, anything happens.
That's true.
It's all love. It's all
and dancing.
Shut it down, Steph. Shut it down.
What happened just now?
I swear we're sober. Anyway. Okay, guys, that is Grimm. Next, we're going to move on to Nene's Choice. And that is Hulu's Booth at the End. Now, since this was your doing, tell us a little bit about it, Stephanie.
Well, it's this riveting story of a diner booth. at the end of the diner, there's this lone booth where this man called The Man on IMDb sits and talks to people, and that's pretty much the whole thrust of the show.
You got that right. I'm like, they don't get up and go outside? Like, what the hell?
It's like snakes on a plane. It's literal. Like, the booth
it's like,
the
it's like, I'm gonna go out to get the serial killer. Bye. And I'm like, see what happened. What the hell? Pan the camera around.
No, it's this. The series follows the storylines of several characters who visit a mysterious figure in the corner booth at the back of a diner. Each character has heard rumors that this man is able to grant desires, provided that a task is performed. Upon receiving the task, the man's only other demand is that the character continually update him on his or her progress. Once the task is complete, the character's desire is always fulfilled. And there you go.
Oh.
I had smoky voice. Was that, did you like that?
That was pretty great. Right out the park.
In a land where there are diner booths.
In a world. Barry never leaves the diner.
But it was, guys, it's so much better than that, though. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. I think you know what? You right. I started watching it today because you just threw out there the booth. Watch the booth. So I'm like, all right, what the hell is the booth? And I kept watching it. I watched it all through work. I was sitting there on my iPhone watching the entire two seasons so far. Well, all of one and then
all seven episodes. Jeez.
And they're like 30 minutes each. So.
That was a lot of time.
Yeah, that's a lot of time to be slacking off at work.
But I wasn't, but yeah, no, don't put that out there like that. But I wasn't bored. The point is, I wasn't sitting there going, I don't want to watch the rest of this.
Right. And I didn't feel that way either. And I just kept getting freaked out and overwhelmed that the storytelling was so good and they never left the booth in the dark.
You never leave. And you get excited. Like, what? The father? The cop? Wait a minute, I know who he is. And then you go through the whole connections and they let you figure it out instead of pointing it to you. They just let you figure out piece by piece. And then it all comes to a head at the end. And I'm like, wow.
Yes.
And the stories are interesting. I mean, the characters are interesting as well. The stories, it's just so artfully done. You know, they come in and they're some of the things that person, the man, asks these people to do, they're so heart-wrenching, and you know where they're going, but then at the same time they'll throw a wrench in there and it's just you can't stop watching. The writing is really really strong, and the acting is really strong. They draw you in. I mean, we've seen people at a diner booth before, like in Birdemic.
Oh,
and that wasn't nearly as compelling.
Which has the sequel coming. I'm just telling you. God. There's a sequel coming. But anyway, go ahead.
In 3D.
It's amazing. I love Xander Berkeley. He's a great actor. And
career actor at that.
Yeah, he is. And his eyes are just, it's interesting. In one moment, he can be, you know, really just, I don't know. It seems like he's genuinely feeling for the person. Mm-hmm. And then in the next moment, he can seem just so evil and calculating.
When he goes, that's not my problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, you cold-blooded bastard.
Right. When he's like, oh, well, I didn't tell you that this wouldn't have happened anyway.
Right. And that's what makes it so good. It makes it so good is that it's like, did it, like, okay, what I'm doing, what you told me to do got me results. Like, my kid's cancer is remission. Is that from you? Is it not? Like, these are mm-hmm. things that could happen anyway.
Mm-hmm. Like, is he crazy or is he supernatural or is he the devil?
Right.
Is he a genie? What is he? Yeah.
Or just a normal dude that knows how to manipulate people.
Yeah. He keeps these meticulous notes, and you're like, is he just keeping track and just kind of playing with these people and randomly telling them to do stuff because he knows, you know, that he just doesn't actually know what's going to happen, but he's right. playing around with guessing what might happen? I don't know.
It seems like a massive butterfly effect. Like, if this person does one thing, then this person connected to this person will do this thing, and if they do that thing, then this thing will happen, and then this next thing will happen, and they're all of the people connected in tiny little ways, and he's just, like you said before, guys, manipulating them, or are they manipulating themselves? And he's like, you told me to do this, and it's like, no, you're doing this because you are choosing to do this. So it's a story about choice, it's a story about decisions and how far you go, and they're just sitting in a freaking booth.
Right. And I was so sucked in too.
He's so careful with dialogue, like,
oh yes,
I'm telling you to do that. I'm saying, if you want this particular thing, this is what the book says to do. And they never stray away from that. His wording is always the same.
Yeah. It's very careful the way he chooses his words. Mm-hmm. So when it's like almost a flat out, it's not a lie, but it's kind of a lie of omission. When the one guy who has a child dying of cancer, asks the man, did you send somebody after him? Is there somebody after this girl or whatever? Is there someone trying to protect this girl? And then he says, I can't remember exactly what he says, but it's basically, he doesn't answer the question. He just says, well, you know, you have enough information, but he doesn't lie either.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah.
He never, ever lies.
Nope.
But he never, ever completely divulges the whole truth. So it's interesting. I wish I could remember the exact line. I can't, but that just means people have to watch it, which is not a bad thing, I promise.
Yeah.
At the end, but and some of the things are heartbreaking. Like, I really was drawn into Melody's story, the girl who wanted her father to be out of money troubles.
Right.
Oh yeah, that was sad.
And it was such a nice, like, in the beginning of it, like, even every one of their stories, when it starts out like something just minute, like just go help a shut-in, visit a shut-in, or go, you know, like something just simple. It's more than that. It's never just what he tells you to do. There's always something else.
Right, and you wonder if that's from the notes that he takes. Like,
yeah,
you wonder if he had helped somebody prior. Like, maybe he helped the shut-in prior.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
That's so true. Like,
and then, but the only question I had from the first season is the old lady in the bomb. Who is she? She wasn't connected to anyone, really. Right? The old lady with the bomb in her husband who had dementia.
Miss Tyler.
Yeah.
That might come up. I mean, that might come up later. But that was heartbreaking. I loved it when they would come in and they would try to lie to the man. Mm-hmm. And they would say, I dropped off the bomb in the cafe.
The cop.
Yeah, I killed the guy. And then the man would say, well, did you get what you wanted? And they would say no, and then you'd say, well, you didn't do it. You didn't do it. And it's just like,
yeah, when he said, if you had done what I asked, you would have what you wanted. Like, what the hell did you just do? Like, you just mind freaked that guy.
Well, talk about mind freaking, like the two that he pits against each other around that little girl.
Yeah, that was
what a crazy change. That story went all over the place, and it was just riveting. Ooh, that was
creepy. Is bad is not good, and the one you think is good is bad. And like it keeps twisting. Like, when they come in to talk to him, it's like, I want him to come back to know what happened. Like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to do, like, that's the thing. You really don't know what the motivation of the people, you know, towards the end, when they finally make the decision, are they going to do what the task that the book asked them to do, or they're gonna
die. Seems like they're his playthings too. I mean, it's almost like he was surprised to find out that one of them had killed the other.
One just went off the rails though with the kidnapping, because I didn't expect that.
I did not expect that either.
He was interested. Ooh. Like, he seemed very, very interested in everybody's story.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like he needs the details to screw other people around.
Or no, because if we get into second season, which I want to talk about a little, a bit about spoilers, if you know, whatever. Because that's what we do here on Sci-Fi Partyline. I do not like the new booth or the new diner in the second season. There's too much light. It's not as spooky. Something's different with the music. And the stories, to me, just aren't getting me there like the first one is.
Oh, really?
I'd have to say the only thing that's drawing me in is Doris, and to know that Doris and the man are from the same cloth and whatever that is.
Or are they?
Ooh, okay, I love her character so much.
Just mess with my head now.
Because it's not really, like, that was never said that that's what it was.
But they just said he... what?
Why? Did they?
No, I thought he said... I thought she suggested that they were the same. They were both guardian angels, and she... He said that, I didn't see it before, but now I know you're one of me, or something like that, or maybe he suggested that.
What? Okay, I have to watch season two now.
Watch that again. I watched it today, and he never confirmed.
I watched it today, too.
He let her lead.
No, he said, I didn't see it before at the other diner, but I see it now. We're like the same. It was.
Well, he didn't even recognize her. Yeah, she followed him, and it was funny because he looked at her in the beginning and didn't even recognize that it was the same girl, even though she looked the same.
Well, that's interesting.
I thought that was him joking. I thought that was a dry joke.
You know, that's kind of weird because, I mean, and I haven't seen the first two episodes of the second season. I haven't seen the second season yet. Mm-hmm. But Doris has always thrown him off. She's always caught him off guard. And I wonder if he himself knew why that was. And I just love that relationship between them. I love that she is unlike any of the characters we have seen throughout season one. I wonder if the reason she throws him off is that she is there to counterbalance him, you know? It's interesting that she would follow him. I wonder if she has her own agenda, that she's stalking him.
I don't know.
Or maybe she's the boss.
No, it just feels like that, like, he's an angel that got cast down, and he was in hiding, and then because she knew about the Stephanie, you haven't seen this part, so that's why you're not really with us, but it just seems like to me that they're the same from the same. If they're aliens, they're both aliens. If they're angels, they're both aliens. Angels. If they're both a genie, you know, or not, whatever, but I don't know. Or are they? Like you said, because you suggested to me, Daryl, that are they actually? Or did you just read into that? And now I don't really know.
Because he never gave her a concrete answer. He kind of was like, it was like they both gave vague answers.
That is true.
This show is so cool. It's only
crazy. My head all crazy with this.
It activates my crazy gene because I want to go in there and just like, what are they doing? What are they figuring out? What are they?
I swear to God, if something happens where they flush a toilet and that's it, and it's so bad.
Oh, dad, God! If they're in purgatory,
you better not break my heart. Yeah. Just show and not do it.
Yeah, that's not going to be cool at all.
No.
Yeah. Oh. I'm a little bit nervous that it's purgatory, but
don't do that.
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine that purgatory would have bombings and serial killer fodder and oh man, that just broke my heart when her dad came in. And you just knew. You know.
And I'm just like, yeah, he's really careless with the characters. I mean, they just were dying left and right.
And did I miss something? What did his father? Did she? Did her father? Did she say what her father had to do?
Oh,
no!
Because
that
he won't look at her.
I don't know.
He won't look at her. Remember, she said.
Yeah, because
he won't even look at her, and I don't think he won't do it because she was dead. Now she's alive. I wonder what he had to do.
That is a good question.
To bring her back. Is it something so shameful that he can't even look at her?
I'm not sure if this was she has to do, but I think she has to go around and grab 15 men's crotches or something.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. In the movie theater, she did it one time in the movie theater. Remember she talked about it?
Yeah, and I was just like,
the guy got up and left.
Figure out that that's what was going on because they never see it. Sorry, Stephanie.
That's okay.
Because they never say it, do they, Daryl? I had to figure it out. And I didn't know. I was like, what are they talking about? What is she? And then she kind of started explaining it. And I was just like, oh, my God.
She was like, I had to get it over with. I'm like, get what over with?
And yeah!
Then she explaining what she was doing in the movie theater. Like,
and she looks kind of weird. And I don't know.
She did give off the crazy gene.
Yes, it's, I don't know.
It should make a man, even though you're doing that, it still make a man go, wait a minute. I'm gonna pay for this later, but when my kidney in a bowl somewhere and me in a tub. That never happened to me, by the way, but I'm just saying.
You're funny.
Hard out there, Dave.
Oh my God. Right. And I kept like, what do I want and what would I be willing to do? Like, if I want to see the man in the booth. What do I need right now? I don't know that I want anything that bad that I just couldn't work for it myself.
I do want some money and stuff, but I don't want to do what he wants you to do.
Yeah, I'm not going to grab 15 men's crotches. I mean, that might amuse
you. Well, how much?
Oh.
How much they giving? I'm just saying. I'm just saying. I'm not saying I'm going to enjoy it, but I'm just saying. How much money are you putting on the table?
I'm going to back away. I'm backing away from this right now.
It's not like you got to marry him. You just got to go.
This is uncomfortable.
It's just what,
like, I'm the only guy that thought, like, if it's enough money on the table, you talk a couple million. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I gotta feed my family.
I need a
counseling
tower.
Can be paid for. I
oh dear God!
A couple of crying showers, I can get over that. Hey, this economy is crazy.
Oh my God, you're a funny person.
I'm just saying.
Embarrassing. Okay.
Don't judge me.
I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
I know. Now I'm just. Okay, let's get back on the rails.
I'm going to shut that down and sing a song about it. Bye.
Where is Daryl's dignity? Left it at the booth.
Oh, no.
Pornography theory.
You know, this show makes you think, like, all the crazy things you hear on the news.
Uh-huh.
It makes you think, I swear, is there a bunch of guys in booths that's just telling people, like, some of the things you hear that people do.
Yep.
That make no sense whatsoever.
No. I thought the same thing.
It's like, this explains it. Like, I wonder if the people that wrote this, they look at the news and they thought about, let's give reason to some of the things that we see happen.
Yeah.
And this could be like, this could be that, you know, this.
Yeah. That, yeah. If you want
to. I wonder, I don't want it to be.
You have to shag a horse. And then we hear from Senator Shag a horse.
You have to Twitter a picture of your junk. Or no, you have to tweet a picture of your junk.
Oh, that's nothing.
Oh, yeah.
You have to hit your...
Compared to the things he said, compared to some of the other stuff, I mean, they had grandma put a bomb in somebody's place.
Yeah.
And she was all about... I mean, it's cool because the show walks you through the thought process.
Yeah.
So, you know, she would waver, and then she'd say, no, people kill for each other all the time. Why can't I have my husband?
Mm-hmm. And then she's like, I'm not selfish enough to do this. I can't do it anymore, and blah, blah, blah.
And you go back and forth like, oh, God, is there going to be somebody coming in saying my son was killed in an explosion? And, like, is she going to do it? You don't know. Up until the very end, you do not know if she's going to do it or not.
And they're all still sitting in a booth.
It's so interesting, the different perspectives as well. So I can only comment on season one, but the two guys, one that was set to protect the girl and the other that was set to kill her, the difference in their stories or in their perceptions.
Right.
So the guy who was set on protecting her saw her in such a different light. You know, he saw that was basically an ideal family, that they loved her so much, and that, you know, he'd like that someday, but not yet because he wants the centerfold, you know. And it's interesting because I thought the story was going in the direction of, well, you don't really want a centerfold, you want a family. But then the other guy who's also stalking this girl, he's like, oh, well, you know, her parents are treating her horribly and they're correcting her too much. And, you know, the perspective there is just different. And he's looking for reasons, you know, justifications. Well, you know, she's better off dead if her parents are that horrible.
And they yell at her. Like, who doesn't yell at their child when...
Right. You know, it's their parents, and you know that they're not completely evil because the other guy thinks that they're the best. So it's so interesting, the back and forth, and it's all in the mind. I mean, it's all in their mind. This whole thing's in their mind. They're making a deal, and they don't know if it's going to happen, but they're like having faith that it could come true, because what else could that be if it's not faith? I mean,
well, I like the nun, even the one with the nun.
Yeah, the nun
who wanted to
was Nina from 24.
Xander
Berkeley. Xander Berkeley's from 24 too.
And I'm sitting there I'm sitting there going, really? Like, you are gonna go through all this? And she was questioning her faith. I mean, that's basically what it was.
Yeah.
And she figured it out on her own.
Yep.
It's like she couldn't handle or take ownership of that realization. She had to come to that realization through someone else.
She needed an outside force. Yeah, she needed an outside force to just tell her. She couldn't just say to herself, I don't want to be a nun anymore. Like, I'm not, you know, I want to have a family, I want to have a baby, I don't want to be a nun. And she just couldn't own that.
She couldn't. And the weird thing is, remember the old lady asking, do you make everyone who comes in here terrible things, kill people? And he said, no, not everyone. And that's true. And it makes you wonder, what was in that old lady's character that told him, yeah, she just might do this. She just might kill someone.
All right.
Yeah, I think he picked like the hardest thing for the people to do. Like, for the Nina character, or the Sister Carmel character, the hardest thing for her to do was to be go out, socialize, and have sex. The hardest thing for the son to do was to tell his dad that he loved him.
It wasn't really about the sex, Kat. It was about her getting out.
You know, if she can't get out, that it's going to be awkward for her to have sex. So it was kind of an extension of that. But like the son who couldn't tell his dad that he loved him, and the cop, the dirty cop, realized he was dirty in the end, and everybody.
He was so bad to his son, like that was realization that he abused his son for years.
Yeah,
that was interesting too.
Yeah,
because we didn't get that until the very end.
That abuse part did not come up. Yeah, that abuse part did not come up to the very end of their story.
And I was really rooting for that guy too. That pissed me off. I I was like, oh, God, just call him. Tell him you love him and actually mean it. You know, like,
yeah.
Just do it. And then I found out that he was abusive.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it was such a hard thing for him to do. Like, it made total sense that that's why it was so difficult. And it, and just for the cop to realize that he was the, you know, all this time, he was the bad cop.
I kind of had an inkling of that. Yeah, I kind of had an inkling, but then it was like, we're going to talk about Terrence, who steals from dead bodies. And then so I was just like, oh, okay, well, maybe not.
Right.
But then it turned out to be him after all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and, you know, one of the themes of the show was you can't see it until you're ready to see it. So right.
That is true.
The girl who wanted to be prettier, you know, who had to rob banks.
That was so superficial. So superficial in the beginning.
Well, yeah, it was superficial on the surface. And then then you start realizing that, oh, there's a deeper reason for that. Right. And then it was just so... I mean, it wasn't moving. Like, it wasn't to the point where I was completely moved. But
no.
I felt like it was genuine, the boy saying... I want to make a deal with you. Make her stop wanting what she wants. Mm-hmm. Because she's already beautiful. You know, and I thought
that too, so.
It seemed like, but it's funny because by putting him and her together, she was part of the reason of him not becoming his father.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was so hardened and, you know, from his experiences of being, he was so much like he was becoming his father. The same, you know, just the me, and, mm-hmm. and without feeling, and to make that deal with him, like, to stop her from doing that, because she doesn't need to. She doesn't need to do that. She's already beautiful. He cared about somebody else besides himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am concerned about their future, because, like, what is that engagement ring going to look like? They're not going to make a lot of money. Sorry.
It goes to medical bills because of her gunshot wound.
Right.
To the arm. Yeah. I have to say that was one of my favorite parts of the show when not the gunshot wound, the part when when you find out about the father and the son, and mm-hmm. when the father is coming to his realization, right. you know, that, well, I'm so mad at my son, he's like a liar and a thief, this, that, and the other, and he said, I don't know who could raise that. And why he turned out that way, oh, it's because I'm a liar and I'm a thief, and of course my son's going to be that way. And that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was almost
He seemed genuinely at peace, too. He, like, left.
Yeah.
He did. He realized, like, by talking it all out, like, by forcing him, because in the beginning he would not talk about it. He kept lying to him.
Yeah.
He wouldn't talk about it because he did. If he talked about it, he would actually come to that realization of who he was as a person. And once he got it, he was at peace with it. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
but by him also being so concerned looking for this crooked cop because of the deal, that also let Melanie get killed.
Yeah,
because he would have been it was a better chance of him not being so preoccupied and actually listening to her and going after that guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now she's like zombie and her dad thinks she doesn't have a soul, or I don't know if that's truly the case, but.
But it was like for every good, like you think he might be kind of all right or kind of good because he did that thing for the boy, for you know, and the girl, mm-hmm. putting them together. Mm-hmm. But then he's also the same guy who's responsible for Melanie getting murdered. Like, he knew.
And the guy who wanted the centerfold.
Right. Like, he was responsible for that.
I didn't like him. I never liked that guy because he never strayed away from him wanting the centerfold. Like, you don't even know her.
Right.
I know. He was so close, too.
Yeah, he gave off the kidnapping vibe, though. He did. He gave off the stalker kidnapping.
It was a slow evolution. Like, at first, he just seemed like this superficial dude who, you know, can't see the forest for the trees, or and then suddenly he evolved into this creepy stalker guy who had this kind of, I don't know, a delusion of grandeur and what a family should be like, and
But if you listen to his dialogue in the beginning, when he didn't ask for the perfect woman for me, he asked for, I want that woman. Like, I want, you know, I get to pick that woman and she'll be mine. Like, mm-hmm. it was superficial. It wasn't even like some, you know, a woman that would like me for me and I'd like her, you know, and we would connect. It wasn't even about that with him. He couldn't even understand that. And the guy that they, you know, that you think is bad because he's going to kill some kid to save his kid, he knew what it was to have a family and to love a family and to love a child. Like, he mm-hmm. was selfish about it in the beginning, but he had
in the beginning, I thought there was
he was ultimately going on the most selfish.
Yeah, he was. He was
the most selfish, because how selfish is it to kidnap the child in order to make it through that final 2 weeks? I mean, he just didn't even think about what the consequences of that
would be. With the mask. It was like, you know, he's not even thinking, go away with the kid, or maybe try to stay there, find some way to stay there, to not... He didn't even care the kid was scared. He just was like, yeah, I put a hood on and I kidnapped her. She's locked mm-hmm. up right now. Mm-hmm. So I can be the hero. Like, you know, just insane. It was just crazy.
Or he just can't connect with reality. Like, he doesn't know what that kind of stuff is like in real life. He just doesn't know.
Well, he's never it seems like he's never interacted with people enough that he can understand any, you know, like, he just doesn't get it. He it's like he's looking at things through TV or through outside yeah. instead of actually, you know, being a part of the world, and then you understand, you know, and you understand how it is to love a child, or you understand how it is to love another person, you know, more than yourself. He just didn't understand that. He just saw the outside stuff and was like, well, I just want that. I want I want to be famous, and I want, you know, I want the pretty girl. That's it.
He was so close to an epiphany, and he just couldn't make it. Like, his character was flawed enough that he just couldn't make it.
Even with the questions.
I think the unique thing about this show is that in 5 episodes, it manages to wrap a viewer in. It manages to make the characters interesting enough to keep mm-hmm. watching. And just 5 shows. And then we're talking about all this stuff that went on. And really and truly, the experience of it is just watching these people talk at a booth. But all this stuff went down, right? And it's all very interesting. And it has layer upon layer of almost like psychoses, you know?
Yeah.
Just interesting. I've never seen a show like this. I mean, obviously people are going to hearken back to when Tom Hanks talked to a volleyball, but literally for me, I haven't seen a show that was like that.
And you won't on regular TV.
Oh, no.
You won't.
It was cool. I just loved it. I really thoroughly loved it. I'm so glad that it wasn't a total like bomb.
I've seen
too many bombs lately.
And sorry. I didn't pay attention to that. Like Steph, if it wasn't for you, we would not have even paid attention.
Me either.
This was like, just some show on Hulu. Like, I didn't even think about it. Like,
me either. She first brought it up to Carl and I, and we were just like, I'm not watching that crap. however, because of Xander, I was like, it's a man in a booth. It reminds me of like Dead Like Me, because that was kind of cool. And it kind of had that Twilight Zone kind of description on it. And it reminded me kind of Supernatural all in one. And I was just like, I'm going to give it a shot. And I loved it, so.
And this is... I wish TV had more... Like, I wish they would put more stuff like this on TV. Because it's missing, but then I know because of how it is and them being in a booth, that most people would look at it and go, well, they don't do anything but sit in a booth all damn episode. I don't want to watch that. And they would just tune out.
And you know what? The second season is not as pure as the first season as far as them in the booth. They like look outside of the booth, and we get to see people on the walk and all this. And I'm just like, you know what? They showing too much stuff.
Yeah, because the best part of it is that you get to use your imagination, and it just goes all over the place.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for watching it, guys. I know that I suggested it without even having seen it.
I know that was...
Wait a minute, I thought you saw it. You didn't even see it?
She hadn't even seen
it. Well, by the time I recommended it to you, I had seen one episode. But, no, when I recommended it to Kat and Carla, I was like, Hulu keeps throwing this in my face. I have to see it. Like, every show that I watch, suddenly it's like, well, if you liked such and such show, you would love The Booth at the End. And I'm like, oh, fine, fine, mark it to me.
Hey, it was, you know,
it works.
This is new TV, but you know what? This is the new, you know, way of watching programming. And I think what helped this is, if this was 22 episodes, I'd probably be ready to kill somebody watching this.
Yeah.
Because you would feel how the writer is trying to stretch this show to get to the season finale.
Yeah.
It really helps that this was only five. That first season was only five.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah,
it felt like so much happened in just five
episodes. I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was very rich and thick with info. So I don't want it to go, and I don't want them. I want them to be less fancy, and because second season is kind of scaring me a little bit.
Yeah, don't top yourself. You don't.
Yeah,
have
don't.
To top
yeah,
it.
No.
Keep doing what you're doing, and it's right.
Yeah.
Slow and steady. It doesn't have to. You don't have to have a car chase at the end when they get out the booth.
Oh, for dear God!
Don't do it. Don't do it. I wanted you to do it in the beginning, but don't do it. I was wrong.
Yeah.
I love that the budget was like $10 rather than probably the writers got paid the most, which is how it should be.
They did, because this show can't cost them much money. It cannot.
Well, they had a lot of food, so.
Whatever. Even they didn't. He didn't eat much food. He was always drinking tea. Yeah.
You can get that from the cart. You can get that from the food cart. That is that. Every movie plate they got production has their own little food thing. You can get that right from there.
Craft sauce.
That cost them nothing. Chunk change.
Oh, all right, guys. All right. Any last thoughts on The Booth at the End?
I hope they do more like this. Like, I would really like to see Hulu and Netflix, you know, like, do more programming like this. Give writers a chance to do these little things that they would want to do that they know they would never get a chance to do it in that format of primetime.
Network television, yeah.
Yeah. Steph, any last?
I'm thankful that you guys liked it too, because I thought, am I hallucinating? Am I really interested in just like a diner booth? Is this really happening? But I'm glad that you guys found it as cool as I did, because it's such a breath of fresh air to have good writing that actually means something, you know? That's cool.
Yeah. I thought it was good. Guys, you can check it out for free on Hulu.com. I think you can also check out Grimm for free on Hulu.com or NBC, ABC, or whatever channel is on. Sorry about that. That's our show.
Just Google it.
It's the end of the night. I'm tired.
Oh, my God.
We'd love your feedback. Give us a call, you know, sometime. I want to hear your voice. 773-336-2686. Go to our website.
Oh, my Facebook page.
Dude, would you stop it every time? Go to our website, scifipartyline.com. You can leave us actual comments there about the show. You can send us a tweet at scifipartyline. Eric will answer those tweets.
Stay off my Twitter.
Oh, dear. And then you can get us on facebook.com/scifipartyline. And we're on Google Plus. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.
Stay off my Google.
Bye.
End of line.